Welcome to Get a Grip with Max Homa and Shane Bacon, a production of iHeartRadio.
Sports fans, golf fans, or just fans, what a holiday treat we have here. It is Get a Grip with Max Homa and Shane Bacon. Max is back for a little, you know what? We wanted to put this together. Traveling around the holidays, not a lot of fun. Being in airports right now, not a lot of fun. I would argue that being alive right now, not always a lot of fun. So we figured we'd bring a little holiday treat. Max, how are you?
I'm good. I'm glad I'm not traveling on the holidays or shopping on the holidays. That just sounds freaking terrible. But it is cool. It's nice to be back. I haven't been on a podcast in a while, which is rare for me. So it's fun to be back on the mic, like Jay-Z says, like all the cool people say. But yeah, it is a treat to be back and do a little holiday. I don't even know if you want to call it a bonanza, but some kind of holiday gift. I'm like the Jewish Santa Claus coming back around in late December.
I listen. I have to start with this. This is how my weird mind works. But you just played in a golf tournament in December. I'm not going to say the name because that gives away one of the answers. So you just played in a golf tournament, right? You know which one I'm talking about. So I went through your 2021, and you've played in a number of different type of events. So when I say that, typically it's the word that would follow the sponsor, okay? How many events, different named event, golf events in 2021 did you play in? Do you understand the question?
Yes, I do. Yeah, because right, this
I
one was
the list here.
Okay, because this one was a shootout, which would be the only one that was a shootout. I played in three invitationals.
Wow, I'm very impressed. Genesis, Arnold Palmer, FedEx, St. Jude. Way to go. That's very well done. That's two. Yep.
And then, oh man, there's a lot of opens, I imagine. One of them being the U.S. and the, God, that's got to be like 12?
No, not even
close.
Five
are the opens.
Farmers Insurance, Waste Management, U.S., British, nobody yell at us, and Houston are your five opens in 2021. You're doing pretty well, but you've still got a few left on the list here. You've got four left that you played in.
Are there any there's a few championships.
That's the biggest one. That's the biggest one. You actually won one of them, so.
It is a championship. You're right.
Yeah. So you played in eight championships: Workday, Players, Valspar, Wells Fargo, PGA, Travelers, BMW, and Fortinet.
Are there any classics anymore? I feel like there used to be a lot of classics.
Mm-hmm. You're onto it. You played in exactly one classic. RSM Classic.
RSM Classic.
You're missing two left on your list of 2021 golf tournament names. You played in one each.
Hold on, I could do this. Hold on, let me run through the whole schedule.
I'll help you out here.
Give me a letter.
a competing podcast likes to call this the blank plaque, not the blank what it is, because of what the trophy looks like.
Oh no, that doesn't help at all.
It's in Vegas. It's floated around. It's typically international, but we've had it in Vegas the last couple of years.
Oh, a COVID. Cup.
Nice. CJ Cup.
Okay,
correct.
That makes sense.
CJ Cup. And your last one, I would say one of the longest running golf tournaments on the Professional Golfers Association Tour. It is one where, you know, Max, you could be paired with a CEO. You could be paired with potentially
AT&T
a great
Pebble
pitcher,
Beach,
maybe a
Pro-Am.
Quarterback. Pro-Am is correct.
Pro-Am. I would have never got that without
seven
that.
Seven different names. And interesting enough, and I was typing this list out this morning as my child was climbing on me, you could go both ways with the Open, because now the Open is considered the Open Championship. So it's really dipping into two
names.
Right.
That's kind of tricky.
I just went with the Open. But there you go. That's seven... Seven events. When I saw QBE shootout, I was very interested. I don't really know how many more there are. I don't know what other terms that would be available to use. The one thing I did run into is, what do we do with the ones that are just the Northern Trust, the American Express.
What well, I was about that? To ask you how many more years till all the uppity folk in the golf community just start calling the Open Championship just the.
I think
it's
we
like
should
the
get
the first, maybe just the first and most important word ever. Because obviously, if you call it the British Open, you are ruining the sanctimony of the game of golf.
No respect.
So the or the is that championship's name? I would imagine the way this the cancel culture is going. I think by 2030, that's what we'll call it.
We'll just we might not even have a word. There might literally not be a word for it. It just might be a blank. Hey, we welcome you to the here at Royal
you
St.
Get
George's.
It.
There you go. I like it.
I don't want to tell you.
I am. Mm-hmm. Hey, I haven't talked to you on the pod since your win. I have two win questions. One is, when you win the first event of the year, are there – this is a question I've always had. Are there incentives for you if you become FedEx Cup number one? So are there sponsorship incentives when you are FedEx number one? Because you are FedEx number one. I don't know how long you've been FedEx number one or how many weeks. But do you get incentives? Do you even know these types of things?
I do. You do not. For that exact reason that it took me one week to accomplish and back up with nothing but, you know, mediocre to bad golf. So that would have been a crazy move if we could somehow snuck that one in the title's contract. You get a fat bonus if you make from your sponsors, I think, if you ever hit number one in the world, from what I understand. Number one FedEx, not end of the year, yes. Beginning of the year, no. It is very interesting, not dilemma, that's it seems like a bad word, but it's a very interesting kind of mental proposition to realize that you are number one at the beginning of the year and you need to hold that for like 11 months. I don't know why it sounded, it's like it's the greatest thing, right? You cannot possibly get off to a better start, but then you're also like, damn, like it might be easier to start in like fifth or 10th. First of all, God, I gotta be the guy who leads this thing. You know, obviously you don't have to lead it the whole way. But no, it was awesome. I've always played like complete, you know, shit in the fall. And I go out there, not that I didn't want to go to the tournament. It's just, I've never really played tremendously well there. And I was pretty tired. Cause you know, the season had like, you know, for the big guys, they had that made the tour championship. They had like only a week off. We had probably 2 weeks off. But yeah, fortunately I ended up going and won and we were just laughing, because you know, we're going to change our schedule around, regardless of what we did that week, for the most part, but we're going to change some stuff. Cause we were just trying to get into top 50 in the world to qualify for the Masters. I think we're, you know, 50 somewhere in the low 50s, maybe low 60s at the time. And you know, we're on the range on Monday, just like me, Mark, and Joe. And I had dinner with Lacey that night, and we all talking about what we should do to get in top 50. And, you know, Sunday afternoon comes, we walk off the 18th green. I was like, you know, like, Joe, I don't really think the schedule matters anymore. I hear, you know, I think we'll be all right. So it was kind of just a funny way to do it. But yeah, that being number one in FedEx Cup honestly is pretty cool. I think I had it for 2 weeks, and I know it's silly, and I know, you know, some people make fun of it or whatever, and obviously it's not like everyone had played in 2 weeks, and it's not quite as cool as I would imagine in, you know, 3 months time or 4 months time or obviously at the end of the year. But it is kind of cool. I don't know why. Taylor Gooch is number one right now, and he gets to hold it for a while. He'll probably be the one to hold it for the longest, you know, for the coming months. And I don't know, I think it's awesome to see, just for like, even though you know it's kind of silly, you know, you leave and you're like, wow, I'm like the best player in the entire world at the moment.
Well, like you were joking about the dauntingness of it, if you will, like being number one at the first week of the year and thinking about, wow, the tour championship literally just wrapped up and I got to end, you know, in theory, I'm trying to end number one a full calendar year. Even like jokes aside, does it feel like now the year is a little bigger for you considering you've already got a win. Now you're kind of thinking I could win multiple times in a season. Like, does that completely change the way you look at 2021, 2022 at all?
Yeah, I would think oddly it probably shouldn't if you're in like the ideal headspace, but I would actually say, yeah, it probably does, because I think it brings like, here's a college word that I don't know if I'm using right, gravitas to the year. Like if you get a win early, like, you know, I've had, this was my first year, I think, yeah, year with two wins,
right?
On any tour, and I have never had two in
like
one
since
season.
You were in college, right? Like
yeah,
since you were in college,
I had to my senior year. Yeah. So I had never had two in a season minus that. So now, you know, obviously there's a much higher possibility, but you just know, you know, like if you get off and, you know, you could have a pretty crazy, like, you know, maybe not historic year, but I know, you know, a couple of times Jason Day and Spieth, I think one year both have 5 wins. And obviously when you get that first one, it just becomes, it seems, you're going to approach each week the same, but maybe just you think, okay, you know, it just gives you a boost, I guess. It's like, this is the, you know, for me, I my biggest goal, the goals this year is to make the Presidents Cup and the Tour Championship, and like, you know, winning early makes, you know, it just kind of, it makes that a lot easier, especially just mentally, to be like, all right, you don't have to. Sometimes you get halfway, you know, midway through the season, and you've had some good events. Maybe you've had a few top tens, maybe a top 5 or 2, but haven't won or something. You start to like maybe feel like you're pressing to do that, and you can't really press and win golf tournaments. I think probably only a couple people in the world or in history probably could ever have really done that. So knowing that I already won one, it's like I have that at least in my back pocket. It feels like the rest of the year is like, I don't know, maybe it feels a little more exciting, you know, like you're in that position. Like I said about Taylor, like he's number one. I imagine he's super motivated. Or I know he's super motivated to keep that up while he goes into January. So yeah, so it is a little bit different. Like I said, it probably shouldn't be, but yeah, I don't know. It's like I always just think to like with the guys like Rory and Dustin and Rom and all those guys must think on a yearly basis, because I think that they just, that's how they feel about every season. Doesn't matter if they win in the fall. It's just like, yeah, they'll come or whatever. So I don't know. But it's definitely exciting. You know, it's just, it's nice to get a break, but it's also a cool time to get a little bit better and get ready to kind of try to chase down those goals from a position that's like, you know, very good. It's not, you're not feeling like, not a lot of sour grapes from the fall.
You know, Kyle Porter has brought this up a couple times. He wrote this in his book that he put out. Everybody should buy it, by the way. It's really good. It's called A Normal Sport. But he said that one of the cool parts about 2021 was, you know, you winning became comfortable. It became normal. It wasn't as big of a, like, everybody loves Max Homa, right? And we all celebrate when you do well. But this year it's felt very normal. Like we almost expect you to be in contention and win. I was thinking about your 3 wins, right? And you win at the Wells Fargo, and that's your first PGA Tour victory. And it's an enormous deal because you're like, I got here. You know, I went from the lowest of lows. I went through, you know, the shittiest times a professional golfer can go through. I couldn't find a fairway. And now I won the Wells Fargo playing alongside Rory. And then you win at RIV after being in contention the year before. You've talked a lot about this. You've talked on this podcast about it as well. Like, that was the one you always wanted to win. Did this one feel the most normal? Did this one feel the most, this is my job, like I'm a professional golfer out here doing what I love to do? Did this one feel different than those two?
Yeah, totally. I thought Wells Fargo felt like I was hot and the putter was hot and things were going my way. And I had my like kind of competitive spirit back. And I went back to just at least the mentals I have had my whole life about like with how I think I'm pretty good at closing things. So I think that all like married, but I don't think like the golf by any means was something crazy. It was special for a week, but it wasn't like I felt like I left that tournament a new player. I just felt like I left there relieved in a way to like get it off, you know, get the kind of monkey off my back and get a win and get comfortable, or, you know, some, you know, what is it called? Just be set with my schedule and whatnot. And then RIV felt like the most, hey buddy, you should probably realize how good you are at this, because I watched it. I remember living it really well. And I just felt like the golfer that should and could do that, in a very, very good field, in some hard conditions. And then, yeah, and then Napa, you know, because after RIV, I actually played quite well, you know, for the remainder of the season, for the most part, obviously minus some ebbs and flows. But yeah, the Napa one, obviously the field wasn't great. John Rahm was there, which helped things, because now all 3 tournaments I've won with the best player in the world in my group at some point. So I'm nice. Hoping, I'm hoping to
Jeopardy
keep,
question.
Yeah, keep getting paired with whoever the best player in the world is on Saturday or Sunday or Thursday or Friday. And, but that one just felt, yeah, it felt different. I definitely felt like a bigger fish in a small pond. I've never not that I never really felt that on the tour, but that's what kind of built after LA. I felt like even like LA was so interesting because the very next week I go to concession for the Workday Championship and I get paired the first 2 days with Rory and Justin. And I just went from like a mega high, and I'm still on a high, but now I'm a very small fish, like very, especially with the crowds we're back there in. We didn't have crowds in LA, and then the very next week is Florida, and we have some crowds, and you could just tell. I mean, people were being super cool to me, but like you could tell, obviously they're there to watch Rory and Justin, and I play well, and then I, you know, go week later and, you know, get a top 10 at Bay Hill, and again, like I'm like bouncing between like feels of like big and small and big and small, and like I notice sometimes I'll play with people who I'll feel like kind of bigger, and then sometimes I'll play with people and feel very small, and it's just like funny how that was working. And then, you know, I play well at Valspar, and I felt like that field, at least on the weekend, I was like, I felt a little bit bigger, and that was interesting. And then obviously the big dog, you know, Sam Burns comes out and asserts himself, but like I felt comfy. And then as the season just kept going on and on and on, I started feeling bigger and bigger and bigger, even in the big tournaments. I didn't feel really, it's just being comfortable, I guess, and being around experience, as they say. So I got to the Napa event, and honestly, like minus John, I didn't feel completely outmatched by anybody. Obviously at that point, John, and this point, John has been playing the best golf like we've seen in a long time. So obviously I was, you know, not like I felt big there, but I don't know. Once he missed the cut, I just felt like, even though I played with Mickelson the next day, it was comfy because I kind of know him, but you know, he's a big personality, but like my golf, I just guess the season just felt like it made me feel a lot taller than I have felt before. And I just felt like, you know, that event, I was playing good, and I don't know, it felt, but to your question in the longest winded way ever, as I do, it did feel way different because it felt like the most routine since I can remember, even back to college. So it's like, yeah, I've had times where I felt like, you know, I grinded it out really, like at the Wells Fargo and at a couple of one of my web events that I won. And then at Riv, I've just played really good golf and like started to get it a little bit. And then this one, I felt like I just trusted that if I played 4 days of good golf, like I would be up there. And that's what happened. That was cool. So it's definitely, you know, I know a lot of people talk about it. There's I think they say there's three PGA tours. There's like the kind of 10 guys, you know, 15 guys, you know, that are going to compete in all the majors throughout the season, or at least a few of them. And then there's the, you know, kind of the tier down that I would put myself in, which is like, you know, the invitational guys, the guys that you would be surprised if they play great in a major, but in the same way you wouldn't. And then there's the next tier guys who, you know, are trying to work their way up into that realm. Great golfers haven't maybe popped through in a big, big event yet. And you know, being in that middle one is cool, because, you know, you can kind of move your way along, but it also puts you in a position where when you play events like, this year's Fortinet Championships at a great golf course, and it always has great players, but it's not a deepest field because of where it is in the schedule, you can go there and kind of oddly enough feel, a little bit bigger, I guess, because that's how I felt like I played the Bahamas Championship last year, or 2 years ago, I guess. And like, even I thought I was like the best golfer in the world by any means, but like I went there and it's a field where, you know, pretty big chunk of the guys don't play a full season on tour anymore. So you can walk around and I try to learn from that and be like, all right, why do I feel like this? Like, why can't I feel like this when, you know, Rory, Rahm, Tiger, you know, JT, all those dudes are around, like, why can't I feel like that? So you try and like emulate, but it's just hard. It's just experience. So that's definitely the biggest change this season is I don't think I'm going to go into any events and be at all like overwhelmed with the field. I think that one finally went away. Getting to play a bunch of invitationals, top 10-ing and the three of them, and just like feeling like I played with like everybody this year and getting that, like, hey, it's not, you know, you're going to have moments that it's going to feel real big, but like the start of the events, fortunately, no longer feel like, I remember the first time I went to this Century, the tournament championships I'm going to. And I was like, you look at the field, you're like, what the hell? Like, it just seemed like fake. And I even made a joke. I was walking with Adam Long and Corey Connors into the hotel everyone stays at, and Corey's room was to the right and ours was down like to the left hallway. And I was joking with Adam, because Adam's like me, just kind of, we like goof off a lot. But I was like, you know, I was like, oh, Mr. Connors, welcome back. You'll be staying, you know, over here. And Corey or Adam and Max, like, you know, you guys just enjoy your time over there, but you know, we're not so sure we're going to see you again. And now it's like, you know, you go there and it's a little bit more comfy. So it's just, it's funny how that works, but it's all experience. I'm sure it's like anything with your job, with anything, first time you're on camera or first time you do an interview with a big, like a big time player, I'm sure it's very scary. And then as you do it more, you realize it's not, it's you just have to be the same person. But I don't know, it took me a minute. I think like the best guys like Jordan and Justin, when they came up, I doubt that they felt that.
They've always been big. I remember 2016 U.S. Open, to your point, and I remember I'd interviewed Andrew Landry, played well for a couple of days at Oakmont, if you remember, and so I'd interviewed Landry. He was so cool and chill. Like, he'd come in, and to exactly what you're saying, it wasn't Rory, you know? I mean, no offense to Andrew Landry, but it wasn't Rory. It wasn't John Rahm. And I remember when Dustin came in for the first time, and I remember, like, the 5 minutes before Dustin, I'm like, because, you know, when you do the big guys, most of the time it's a live interview. Some of the time, you'll tape an interview if it's not, again, Dustin, Rory, Ricky, whomever. And I remember DJ walked in and I was like, oh shit, here we go. You know, like, this is your first time kind of spinning in this world. And yeah, it's different. You know, I was thinking about you this year, because 2021, I think when we kind of look back on the Max Homa experience as a professional golfer, 2021 is going to be the year we really remember, because you won at RIB, but you won twice. And to your point, it seemed like the confidence grew, the understanding grew, kind of what a lot of people in your life had seen. You started to understand as well. Maybe you always understood it, but you understood it more and you kind of showcased it. What I look at you as, and I think this is very important for 2022 and beyond, you know, there was something floating around on social media the other day, and it was like, pick your best driver, your best iron player, your best wedge player, your best putter, and Koepka wasn't on there. And I think Koepka retweeted it with kind of the, you know, the emoji, like the
How was he not on there?
Like, it's so silly. I mean, Matthew Wolf was on best driver, like, just put Koepka in there. But you're one of the best in the world at playing hard golf courses. And so when you look at 2022, and this is something, I mean, kind of following you in the last few years, really kind of following how you play, is when it gets tough, you play well. And so you mentioned a couple of your goals. What are some of your goals in terms of like majors and things like that for 2022? Because, I mean, I've said it on Golf Today. I've said it on our show. We did it, you know, we had a lot of weeks on looking ahead stuff because there wasn't a lot of golf on. And I was like, you know, there's two majors, the PGA and the U.S. Open, in my opinion, really fit Max's game. So when you look at 2022 now with the confidence and the belief and all these things, outside of President's Cup, outside of Tour Championship, which I think you missed by one spot, of course, I mean, in 2020, what are you looking at in terms of some of the other events and like goals, maybe things you wrote down?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting you ask, because I was just talking to somebody about this yesterday, about what you do, or 2 days ago, what you do with your schedule. And I was like, I think there's only a handful of guys that should, in my opinion, like pay massive attention to the majors and make it these big goals, because my career is not valued off of majors yet. Hopefully someday, but I don't think a lot of people's are. Rory. But like I have three wins. I do analogies in comparisons in extremes. So would you like, you know, I could ask myself, for someone who has zero majors like myself, would I rather have five? Because a lot of people weigh majors real big. Would I rather have five majors and five total wins? So like five total, all majors, kind of, you're in a legendary spot there. Not a lot of people won five majors. Or would I rather have like 40 to 50 PGA Tour wins? And I think it's no brainer. I'd rather have 40 to 50 PGA Tour wins. So my point is that I don't have nearly enough wins to think, oh, my legacy is going to be based off of these majors. So I try not to overthink it. However, I've done such a poor job in them that there has to be something that is a little bit, that I'm doing a little bit wrong or different than I typically do, because to your point, I should play really well in the Masters. I'm not the most consistent putter, and that's really let me down. I'm not the best short game guy. So that's kind of where you can save some things. But as far as the ball striking goes, I've played it well two times for the most part. It's just the putter hasn't been
like
there.
Tee to green.
I've made a couple of mistakes, but for the most part, like overall, I haven't really, that's not been the reason I haven't played well. I can play that golf course with my cut off the tee. I found out I can iron the hell out of it. So it's like, I like the golf course in that manner. So that one's frustrating. I haven't played better there. So I don't know if I have a goal for that one, but like, I really expect myself to play better in that. And then the US Open, especially because I've been where it is this year, I would imagine I play well there.
You played the country club.
I played the USAM there. I mean, I played awful, but that was, you know, 10 years ago. So I really expect myself to play like well there, just in US Opens in general. So I guess my goals would be, I think out of the four of them, if I'm being like, obviously, like, honest, what I would like to do is be kind of in the mix in all four of them, obviously. But if I'm saying like for a goal, I think a realistic goal, I would very much like to just be in contention in one, especially one of the first two, to just feel it. And obviously, hopefully, you know, hopefully that means I win one, hopefully. Right. But who knows? But I really do, because I really was telling Joe, and I think we, you know, we may have talked about the Open Championship, or the, I think we had talked about how, like, I just want to make that cut so damn bad, because I hadn't made a cut in a major in so freaking long. I wanted to feel what it's like to play Sunday at a major, and just get to be on the course for 4 days, to feel that for 4 days. So I think that was sadly not a goal, but it was definitely a mini win in a way, in a weird way. But this year, I think like the next is like, hey, you need to at least like have a feel for, hey, if I play a good weekend, I have a chance or something like that. And it's not just in one of them. I like to do that all four of them, but they should fit me. I mean, the Open is tough. The weather's, you know, who knows what you get. And it's so different.
But don't you feel like that plays into
you? Yeah, it should. I just feel it
like
should.
Plays
all
in
of
your
it
hand,
should.
Because like, you'll just play through the crap. Like, I don't feel like you like, weirdly, and I think pro golfers like it less the longer they're out there, because golf is so manicured to you specifically. I mean, for goodness sakes, we're playing lift, clean, and place now.
Yeah.
Preemptively, yeah. Right? I mean, we're playing it before the weather rolls in. So for somebody like you, I just have always felt like the shitty stuff plays into your hand.
Yeah.
I just feel like if it blows 30, if it's raining, if it's crappy, if the greens are firm, if it's a US Open and it's super brown, like for you, you should be going, sweet. Now there's 40 less guys that can handle
it. I think that's
this,
a
you know?
Great point, actually, because so what I realized about myself this year, looking back on everything, is like everyone has a quality as a golfer. Like I look at these young kids or, you know, it's tough with like
look
the top
you.
Guys, but
there.
Well,
you're,
I play with these, I play with like Will Zalatoris, and I play with, you know, Victor Hovland and Colin Morikawa and Wolf. And you like, just like, they're superstars, like super, super, superstars. Some of them are already, some of them are getting there, to the super, super stardom. But they are all unbelievable. And like you and Scottie Scheffler, and like, I watch these kids, and like, you kind of like try to see what they are. Like, they're all a little bit different. So then like, it makes you think of what you like would be, what myself would be classified as. And I realize is Lacey's dad calls me a mutter, yep. And like, so I, you know, I think with the way I play with the, you know, best guys in the world in my group at those times is, I think I'm like a dog. And I think the problem is when I go to a major, I forget that it's like a dog fight. Like it's not, yep. It's not a, who can be the most perfect thing out there. And I think that's been tough, because the US Open, you think you need to hit every fairway and every green and be smart and never make a mental mistake in this and that. It's really, you just gotta be freaking, you have to be a dog. You have to be tough as hell. You have to make a bogey and wipe it off and move to the next and then make a birdie and just keep doing that for 72 holes and be the toughest one out there and play great golf. The Masters seems like, because a lot of birdies get made, it's like, no, you just have to keep plugging. You have to avoid the big number there, but you just got to keep kind of like, just like be tough as hell. Tough. Yeah. And then obviously the British Open. I don't call it the Open. I'll be honest, guys. I don't call it the Open Championship at home. I call it the British Open.
What do you think percentage of tour guys? What do you think that
80.
When you guys are just casually having a conversation, you think
I would say
95%
of the Americans, I would say.
Say British Open. Yeah.
I would say like that one is the easiest one to say that about, because I'm from freaking Southern California. I don't know what weather is, but when it gets cold and rainy, I turn off my mean to max thing, and I just get really like comfortable in knowing that everyone else is going to be a jerk to themselves and I'm not going to be. And the PGA would be the toughest one, because the PGA, I think, marries the part that I don't do great, which is going low on hard courses, like for 4 days. It's a little bit lower scores and the courses are very demanding. And I just think my short game hasn't been there to help me in those times where I need to just like gut out like a 6-hole stretch. Do I think I can't play well? No, but it's just, I think that the other three are really shaped to how I have played in my career mentally and physically. So, but I would be nice to obviously play better in them. It's been a funny, you know, kind of, you know, big cat from Barstool, part of my take, like he's just made the trend and it makes me laugh because it is true. Like it would be, I'd be lying if I didn't think about it. You know, you're never playing just to make the cut, but at that, you know, Royal St. George's, I was like pretty damn stoked just to make the cut. And, you know, I hate to admit it, but like, that's just how you feel. So it's become kind of funny. And again, I don't look at my whole year. I didn't look at my last year as being last season as being a down year because I didn't play well in the majors. Again, like I say that because I'm not to that point in my career. I'd love to be, but I think that comes with a lot more success where you can base your whole season off, hey, I had a good year because I won one of the four big ones, or if you want to add the Players' Championship, one of the five big ones. I'm not there, so it doesn't weigh on me like it does with other people. It's just very, as someone who likes to think or thinks too much, it's just so interesting. So it's like, why can I go in? I went to the Masters both times playing so freaking well. And I was like, oh, this is it. Like, and so there's something mental that gets in there. And I was actually talking to Scavi about this too. Augusta is, Jordan's a rare one. Augusta is the biggest learning curve, man. Like I look back at so many shots and putts I've hit there. It's the only course where we'll talk and like someone will say, what's the hardest putt at Augusta? And I could tell you right now, and I've only been there for, you know, six rounds, but like
what is it?
Left to right on 17 from the back of the green, back left green to the back right of the green, because it looks way uphill and it's way downhill. But that stuff that you pick up from other people talking about it and yourself looking at it, but it's so dramatic there. It's very, you know, sometimes you'll say like you obviously lived in Scottsdale, everything breaks towards the valley, right? And the valley's arbitrary, but we know about where it is and it does do that. But like, I mean, I'm pretty good at golf. You're really good at golf. Like how and you've played a lot of golf in Scottsdale. Could you, like on a 12-foot putt, is that an inch? Is that 2 inches? Is that 3 inches? I have not one damn clue. But
at
Augusta, you can really see, because it's not dramatic. In Augusta, you could really tell, you know, like these shots, these putts, these whatever. You're like, dang, that was faster. Dang, that moved. Like, dang, like that's just crazy. So that's where I just feel like so much experience is important at Augusta. And obviously you still need to play amazing golf. Don't get me wrong, but like there's certain shots and places to leave it and putts that you need to know more than any golf course I've ever been on. So that's the interesting part about that one. I think that's the one that, I think that's why it is so such a career booster and such a kind of, you get put on a pedestal because I think it requires so much, outside of just physical, but the physical is so much too. But I think they're so even because you have to handle pressure. You have to have like a great multifaceted golf game, but you also have to have like a brain that I think like can digest all of that information. And I think that's pretty difficult. You look at, I mean, the most obvious one is Rory. And I don't know which part of that equation hasn't matched, but it's not the golf or the physical part of the game.
Well, I mean, when you go historically, I mean, if you go historically over players that you went, this person, I mean, this is what I always try not to do as a broadcaster. I try never to give tournaments to people when they come close because you never know, right?
This would have been an alley-oop.
Yeah, I mean, and Rory, Weisskopf, Greg Norman, for goodness sakes, who drove the ball as well as anybody on the planet. Ernie Els. People were saying before Tiger, they were like, Ernie's going to win five green jackets, you know? So you get to a point where I think what you said is right. There's experience at Augusta that matters, and that experience is truly about the golf. But I think the longer you hang around mentally, it's tougher to win.
Yes.
So you need that perfect mix. Like it's probably, we could probably do the math. It's probably like 4 to 6 years or 4 to 7 years. It's like
sweet
that
spot,
window of your best chance to win the Masters because you've had 3 or 4 years to understand the golf course, but you haven't played it 10 times to go, I've never got a shot here. Because to me, I mean, Rory McIlroy could go to the first tee at Augusta tomorrow and shoot 67, and it would be an absolute ho-hum round of golf. But when you put everything else into it, it gets heavier. So, I mean, that only makes sense. I'm going to give you – I got a couple more golf questions, and we're going to get to some more stuff. I'm going to give you one major next year. You can win the Masters at Augusta Nationals, where they're hosting next year. You can win the Open at St. Andrews, the old course, next year. Which one are you picking?
The Open.
Nice.
It's crazy. We've been playing this game a lot. Joe and I do Would You Rathers all the time, and now we've got people sucked in. Like Webb Simpson will come up to us across the range and be like, "All right, Joe, Max, I got a Would You Rather for you." But we like compare.
What's your best Would You Rather? What's your best one you guys do, or which one's the hardest one to figure out an answer to? Do you have one specifically?
I have We did the one that's gotten the most contention. We all fight over. I won't tell you who everybody said, but at the RSM, I was watching two guys chip. It was Jason Day and Zach Johnson. And I asked Joe, end career right this moment. You can't, no projection. End it now. Whose career would you take, Jason Day's or Zach Johnson's? And the reason it's a great question, they both had obviously phenomenal careers, is Zach has won two majors and they've been on the two greatest golf courses in the world, right? And Jason's won one major and I think less tournaments, or maybe about the same tournaments, but Jason's made number one, been number one in the world, and Zach has not been, I don't think he's been too close. So, and then we like knocked it down. I won't go through all the names because I think I'm not like trying to like, you know, diminish careers. It wasn't obviously like that, but I like to see, we like to see where people's heads, like what you value, because I then picked somebody who had been number one in the world, but I think, but hadn't won a major. And like, we were like going through all these people. So we do majors too. It's like, you know, would you rather win, you know, one Masters or two PGAs, or, and we just see where people's brains are and how they value it and stuff like that. So we were doing that with, you know, would you rather win, I think we did actually might have done like, would you rather win the Open Championship at St. Andrews or the Masters? And it was like such a hard question because you're, until I went to Europe and played this year, I would have said the Masters by a thousand.
Right.
And I don't know. There's something special about it. I think it's you could really make it a toss up. I'm sure by, you know, February, I'll tell you it's the Masters, but there's some about like, that was the last major I played. And there's just, it just was so memorable. And I don't even care that much about the history because I haven't been there. I'm sure when I get there, I'll get it. Obviously, you know, better than pretty much anybody, Shane, what it's like. But just the Open Championship in general, I was enamored by, and I can't, I can't wait to learn about and get that feeling at St. Andrews. But I played St. George's, where people didn't even really like highly regard. And I thought it was the coolest damn thing I've ever done. Yeah. So, I don't know. It's tough because the Masters is the Masters, man. Like, that's just nothing really cooler in golf than having a, you know, than picturing having a green jacket. I never hit a putt in my life when I was a kid to win the Open Championship. I promise you that. But as I've gotten older and appreciate the game of golf more, I think that like the way I like to play golf, I think that would be a really cool one, you know, really anywhere, because I just think that that kind of golf is just, it attracts itself to me a lot more. I think that the Masters is, or Augusta National is amazing at marrying the two, because it's not like you play the ball on the ground, but you have to move it a little bit and you have to be just insanely precise. The Open's, I just think that the Open pushes your limits of patience a shade more. And for me, as someone who has so little, it's like my Everest, but I think I could do it. Yeah. Test, so yeah. I love it. I don't know. If you had to pick between those two, where would you go?
So I would go Zach for a couple reasons. One is, St. Andrews is, you know, the most special golf course in the world to me personally, just because, I mean, I've got a lot of things there and it would be so cool. I'm going to try to go over and qualify for the Open next year.
Hell yeah.
I do this every 5 years. I go over and try to go through the process of it and all that. But you know what Zach has that I think a lot of people sleep on? Zach beat Tiger in a playoff. And I think there's only two people that have ever done that. So I know it was an official PGA Tour tournament and all that stuff, but I mean, to beat Tiger Woods at a playoff is...
And the way...
It's like a mini major,
that's,
you know,
true.
I mean, so I would probably go Zach, just because, again, you're going to be at the Champions Dinner your whole life and you'll be an Open champion at St. Andrews your whole life. But that's pretty good. Max, I got a question
for
you.
St. Andrews, did you say winning at St. Andrews or Masters?
I said winning at St. Andrews and then winning the Masters. I mean, you get to go to both those Champions Dinners.
You
get to be a part of all that. I mean, what that would just be to me. It's like that would be one and two for me in some order of like majors to win would be winning those two. So it would be pretty special. You just went on a ski trip, Max.
I did.
Where you did, but you didn't ski. You're a professional golfer, so I don't know if you're not contractually allowed to ski, or if you just
don't
like to ski.
I think I'm allowed to, but I don't remember ever seeing that I can't, but I don't, because
are you
smart.
A skier?
I used to ski, then I snowboarded, and then I think I was freshman year of college or maybe senior year of high school. I'm not great at it, but I wouldn't really like fall unless, you know, something out of my control happens. I wasn't going super fast. And someone had fallen in front of me, which made me have to like spin out. And my knee got to that part where you almost like it almost popped. Like I felt it. And I just snowboarded down, handed the guy all my stuff. And I was like, yeah, this ain't for me. I'm like, I'm not going to be Shaun White out there. Like, at least I have a chance to be, you know, friggin' Tiger Woods. Like, it's a better chance than I have to be Shaun White. So how about we give this up and go sit inside?
So give me your, so you go on a ski vacation, you and Lacey, and I think some family friends.
Lacey's family, right? Yeah.
Her family. All right. So I need the Max Homa 5 keys to a ski vacation when you don't actually ski.
Okay.
Do you have 5?
Yes, I have 5. I love my list. Right, made me laugh writing this. One is booze. Has to be booze. Obviously. You literally can't get through a trip, especially with you know, her family is much less wild. They're crazy than my family. So like, but I still needed booze. Everyone seemed to need booze. The first thing we do when we got there is go to the liquor store and get wine. And, you know, I got an Elijah Craig, deal now.
It's behind you. I can see it behind you.
And I brought some of that and it was like the 130 proof and that will keep you warm in the snow. So, that was number one and it was not particularly close.
So real quick, Max, like you're not skiing, so you don't have any alarm in the morning. You wake up when you wake up, right?
Have nothing.
You have nothing to do. I mean, are you at the house like alone at one point in the day? Like,
no, because only people on that trip, I thought everyone was going to go ski and snowboard, but, the only people that went, Lacey and her two brothers. So, the rest of us were just chilling. Obviously I have my dog, so we were just chilling. So, yeah, I don't think I was ever alone at the house. We had too
What's
many
your
people.
Average first cocktail? Average time for first cocktail on ski trip?
Oh man, one of the days was aggressively early.
Like 9:30.
Yeah,
10
it had
in the
to
morning?
Be like by 10, 9:30, 10.
Like a New Year's Day. You New
it
Year's
felt
Day
very much. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I would say the average was later because I wasn't trying to be weird. But. Yeah, it's probably like lunchtime for sure. Was getting something to
12:30.
Yeah, 12:30. But yeah, one day was aggressively early. And I especially because like I think I'd woken up like very soon before that. But yeah, so number two on the list, and I know not everybody can do this, but it's my list, is a dog to watch run in the snow because of multiple reasons. One, my dog gets the zoomies in the snow, which is cute, but it's also hilarious because when it was a lot of snow, she was just jumping around, running around with like zero like thought. And then she would hit this spot that was way too deep and like be neck deep in the snow and like freak out. And I thought that was the funniest thing ever. And the second is because when she would like get really hyped up and crazy and she'd bury her face in the snow for a second, she'd come out looking like she just did like a ton of cocaine, like from a movie, like where like, you know, one of those drug movies,
like mob Narcos
movies,
or something, Narcos, yeah.
Where you like they catch the guy that's Scotty because she has this huge thing, and I don't know why it makes me laugh so freaking hard when she looks at me because she doesn't look like the same dog at all. But just watching that, it was a blast.
Did it make you think of what she looks like at you when you have weird facial hair?
Yes, 100%.
Like, is that the same thing?
Yeah, it was 100%. Like, why does he have a mustache today? How is he doing this? That's exactly what it makes me think. Because it's just like, I can notice the littlest thing. She pins her ear back. She looked like a different dog. But in the snow, she was like living her best life. But she also was addicted to drugs. So we had to get her out of there pretty quickly.
Number three.
A lodge of sorts, so you can at least feel like you're part of the community. I feel like that's important on a trip.
Oh, interesting.
Because everyone's
so not,
skiing.
Not your own house.
No, because
not your own.
Everybody's out and about, and that you know, everyone's kind of like, "Oh, you shred today, bro."
You like the energy.
Yeah. And you're like, man, okay. "Nah, man, I'm just kind of like walking around drinking," and then you kind of feel like a loser.
So you skiing?
No. So at least like getting in the lodge and being like amongst the crew and being like, oh yeah. Like,
did you ever lie about that you had been skiing?
No, it's pretty. I think it's pretty obvious with me, man.
Gotcha. Okay.
I have the right gear. You know,
I'm in sweatpants.
Yeah, like I was almost always in sweat. So I should have put sweatpants on this list, but
you can add it.
No, it doesn't fit. I took actually some pretty. Actually, this fit. This kind of goes into my number four. So. Okay, I'm just gonna go to number four.
So hold on. So real quick. So you're at a lodge. So you have an area that you're staying in with the fam and the dog and everybody. And then so you would occasionally just kind of mosey around the lodge resort area to just kind of run into people.
Well, so basically we were in an Airbnb right off the main street of Park City. And then there was a lodge at the ski place or whatever that Lacey and her brothers went. So we went there one day, and that was kind of fun, just being like amongst it on the mountain. But right. then like the other times is like when I would just walk down to run an errand, or we would go to like a couple, me and her brothers and Lacey would go down to like just the bar down the road that we could walk to and just hang out. We would eat lunch or whatever there, or like, you know, kind of pre-dinner. A lot of meals is a big key to vacation as well. But you like that felt like a little bit of a lodge. So you just like feel like you're part of the community a little bit. But yeah, like we would try and get out of the house as much as possible. Just because we could walk, it was so easy to get everywhere. So like that was the fun part. So we could just kind of cruise around.
Did you get noticed? Did you get noticed at all? Anybody know you're is that Max?
I did not. I would say that beanies and big jackets help a lot. But I did see the very first place we went on the very first day. This like four guys were wearing FootJoy jackets, and I was like, wow, that is just like remarkable that that's the gear, because like I have all of it, and I never thought that it could hold up. So shout out to FootJoy, I guess, like even in this coldest of places, like it stands up to the weather. Just, I didn't even consider taking my own stuff, so that was kind of shocking. Speaking of FootJoy, I think number four for my five keys to a solid ski vacation when you don't ski is a sick fit, and I think that requires cool shoes, a cool beanie, and a cool jacket. I think the pants don't matter. So we could interchange that for some sweatpants. I tried that on vacation. Beanie is important.
I think it's a huge part of the vacation.
I think
multiple, like, do you have multiple? Or just
I only have one because I think this is part of it. I don't look good in many types of beanies, but there's one specific beanie that I think I look good in, and I just brought that one. And then I had two jackets. They're the exact same color, but they were slightly different thickness. So if I was going for Mr. like Eskimo Man, I went with a thick one. If I was going like, hey, we're going to dinner, I want to look suave, I'm going with the thinner one. Sometimes throw a hoodie under the thing so then I could kind of like layer it. But I think a sick fit is important because you watch all those guys come down the mountains and they're wearing some crazy stuff. I don't know for the young folks out there if you saw, or the older folks out there if you saw Johnny Tsunami back in the day on Disney Channel, but that guy proved that to be amongst the mountain, you better have some sick clothes.
Look good on the mountain. Did you see Kurt Warner's jacket the other day?
That was awful. Yeah, it looked like
Hershey.
So can you tell me that is not the exact same make of Phil Mickelson's sunglasses he wears that could be from CVS and maybe could not be?
Really good point. So much.
I was
reflection.
Too late on it to like tweet it, but that's all I could think of. I'm like, look at this guy. jacket could be $2 million. It could be $4. We have absolutely no idea.
Phil's glasses. I've never had glasses that clean or clear before. Like, is he rubbing them down minutes before he goes on air? Mine are always smudged.
If they are from CVS, he might just get a new. He might have hundreds of pairs. Now, if they're from like Tom Ford and they're like the $50,000 glasses, I assume they are. Then I think he has a guy who's cleaning them.
He might have multiple pairs of that.
Tim is cleaning them.
Was that Jerry Jones? Was that Jerry Jones that had his son clean his glasses?
Yes.
Is that what happened?
The box. That was a tough scene.
There you go. Tough scene. So a good fit's four. And then what's number five?
Number five is booze, but in a hot chocolate.
Oh gosh, we're bringing it back. So is that later in the evening? You've kind of run through Elijah Craig. You've run through wine. You need like a little sweet pick me up, but you want to throw something in it. And what do you throw in?
Dude, so I don't drink coffee, and everyone drinks coffee. So I always feel left out. So I will, especially right now, it's a little cooler. I'll get like hot chocolates in the morning to fit in with everybody. So mine was my morning. That was my aggressively early Baileys day. But I'll drink it any time of the day. Especially when everyone's like, we're going to Starbucks or whatever. What do you want? And I'll be like, you know, just give me a little hot chocolate. And when they ask me, do you want whipped cream? I'm like, is that a serious question? And then when I'm in the ski area, it's like, do you want any alcohol? And it's like, yeah, I'd love some Baileys in it.
It feels like Forgetting Sarah Marshall, right? Where he brings the two bottles.
Yes, exactly.
He brings the double Malibu bottle.
Exactly. So that I think that's important because when it is really, really cold, you need to warm up, but you can never forget the number one of your list, you know? And so you got to incorporate that as much as humanly possible.
Bring it back. I really like your list. I think it was a very smart list. I love the fit being involved.
Fit's important.
I do think the fit, the winter fit is an underrated look. I mean, I live in the Northeast now. By the way,
you should get this.
It's exactly a year ago to the day. This was this morning that I left Scottsdale. Yeah. This morning I drove to Texas, all the way to Dallas from Arizona on this day a year ago. But that is one thing, is like, it's so easy to get the lazy winter cold fit. And occasionally when you kind of bust out your best stuff.
So what's your best going around, step? Like, what are people's best step? I don't really know.
Real quick. I know this isn't going to make it on the podcast, but do you see what I own
now? Oh, no, Shane, you own Uggs.
The Bugs boots. So you got to make sure you clear.
Okay.
And these are like ugly, like the, because, you know, they make like Uggs slippers and stuff.
Oh, gotcha.
But I got these like 2 weeks ago. And I mean, this is pretty much the only thing I have on all the time. Cindy thinks
they're
absolutely,
man,
ridiculous. Listen, it's cold, Max. When you're cold, you'll do anything. When it's consistently cold, you went to do like the cute winter trip.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's no, full, okay. I couldn't Boom, be there more right than 3 days. Arizona. I don't know how you're doing it. I would be so fat. So fat, well, you, if I lived in the cold. I could not be
the
there any more days.
You get the Peloton,
I
right
guess,
there,
man. So I just think I'd lose all, like, who cares? Like, no one's gonna see you, man. Like, I have 8 layers on. Like, I just look like the Michelin man at all times. So why care?
But the reverse is that there's legitimately
nothing
not
else
anything
to do. Yeah, okay.
So like going to the gym, and we have daycare at the gym, so going to the gym is like a break.
Yeah.
So that's
a great
huge
point.
Part. Speaking of the winter and the holidays, I asked for your favorite holiday thing and your least favorite holiday thing. I'm going to go first,
yes, please,
on least favorite. Okay. This has been a part of, this has been a bugaboo my entire life. I feel like I'm somebody that can learn things. I can't learn this. I can't wrap presents.
Oh man, that's a good one.
Do it. I can't. I have tried, my sister, my wife, my mom, I've had multiple people sit with me over the years and explain to me. I watch people wrap presents well, and I'm amazed. I can never cut the paper correctly. I cut too little or too much. Then I get frustrated, and then I say F it, and then just put like the extra strip in the middle and use way too much tape. It's always overlapping. It looks like a kid did it. This has been something my entire life. So that might be my least favorite holiday thing.
Do you go with the bags? Like,
I don't, but I should.
I do, man. I've given up.
Okay.
I've just given up. Because it's more embarrassing, man.
This is my,
go.
This is my
I tried
last,
my
this
absolute
is my last
hardest
year.
On this, and it
and
looks
that's
like
what
this.
It looks like.
Yeah.
I mean,
I'm sorry. Like. What is your least favorite? So that, or what is your favorite?
That's
sorry.
That's my least favorite. Before I get there, I just have a quick take for you, a little holiday take. I want to get your thoughts on it.
A holiday take. No, it doesn't
A holiday take. Everybody during October just spends the entire month shitting on candy corn. I'm just saying that's what everybody
like
does.
Their motivation. Like,
yeah,
I like
so
candy
gross.
Corn.
It's so nasty. It's fine. It's fine. But I think candy canes are kind of the candy corn.
Candy canes suck.
Thank you.
I like candy
point.
Corn. So maybe I'm part of the problem here.
I got some candy. Henry wanted some candy canes the other day. I got some candy canes. I was eating one a couple nights ago. Total waste of calories. Total waste of sweets. Give me a cookie. Give me ice cream. Give me chocolate. Anything else, I'm out.
They give you a round candy cane when you leave almost every 2 to 3 star restaurant in the world. They give you one of those little mints. You get one everywhere.
Not 4.
I mean,
five,
maybe
a
4.
A 2 star,
but I'm just saying, like, they hand them out. Like, they're literally giving them out like they're candy, but they're not candy.
It's not just not.
They're
great.
Not good.
That's
a breath mint.
Yeah. I have a favorite thing. My favorite holiday thing is we live in a society where traditions are getting lost by the minute. I do like the fact that we have a 4 to 5 week period every year. I mean, that you get to put a tree up, that you put lights up, that people, not everybody does it, not everybody celebrates it, not everybody's under the same umbrella in it, but I would say that it seems like the last tradition left in society, and so I'm in on that.
Yeah, that's a good, I mean, shoot, that's a amen. Amen to something staying the same.
There you go.
I have 2 of each. I thought you wanted 2 of each for some reason, so I don't know why.
Fine,
now I'm reading it and it doesn't say 2. Okay, number 1 is shopping for anything and then realizing that other people feel like they have to shop for me because I don't care. I don't want anything. Couldn't care less. Is it nice? Like, gotcha. Am I happy to have it? Like, but if you want to go on the internet and send it to my house, like, that is totally fine. I don't need to open something. I don't need you to go to the store because I hate going there so much that it just makes everything better not to go. But I know that sounds like selfish. Like, oh, of course, I want to give people presents, but it's like the process of wrapping them, I suck at it. And it just feels like, you know, it's fun to open, but you could just nowadays, you just open a big old box anyways. If I just shipped it to you.
I mean, we open So here's the one of the things I, to your point on that, Max, one of the things I think has been lost a little bit with all of our celebratory holidays, Christmas, Father's Day, Mother's Day, birthdays, is we open shit all the time.
You get a gift from a guy named Amazon, like every day.
All the time. Weekly, daily for some people. So that sensation of cutting the box open and opening it, no, it's done. 20 years ago, we'd get that twice.
And I don't want people to feel like they need to go in the. I mean, it is war out there. It is war.
Yes.
I mean, we had a full conversation with a grown-ass man yesterday about how he's scared to go to the mall because he forgot he has to go today. And today is the 23rd.
I mean,
he is so scared. And yeah. I'm like, man, I don't want anybody to feel like they need to go get me something by like fighting off a bunch of Karens. And I don't know what the male version of Karen is, but like, I don't want them to have to feel like they have to do that. So I hate that. So that's my least favorite for sure. And then my second least favorite, this is contentious. Uh-oh. Let me finish it because it's a very quick sentence, but it's important.
Right, here we go.
I don't like Christmas music and you can sue me. I'm half Jewish, so I will win that battle in court. I don't love it. I like it in spurts. People will listen to it. I feel like you are that person, Shane, the entire month of December. And I would rather just listen to regular music. Here and there, great. The constant of any Christmas party or any whatever, like December drive, it's too much for me, man.
Christmas music, it's interesting. I'm actually not as much in it as you'd think. And the reason being is, you know how everybody says you've got to work at a service industry job at some point in your life to kind of understand and treat people the right way? If you've ever worked at a job that involves Christmas, you understand that the music, it will forever taint you. I worked our hometown in East Texas, Marshall, Texas, has a thing called the Wonderland of Lights. My dad was in charge of the Wonderland of Lights in the mid-90s. We were in, bro. Like, there's an outdoor ice skating rink, the only outdoor ice skating rink of the state of Texas at the time. I mean, it's like everybody decorates crazy-like, all these neighborhoods, all this stuff. Well, I worked at the food stands for the month of December where we would sell hot chocolate and cider and popcorn. 8 hours a day of Christmas music. So that was 20 years ago, and I still think about it. So I'm a little with you. I think if you can wait until about the 15th, then you can go 10 days of Christmas music and not hate it.
Yeah, but for sure.
If you're starting in November, it's
just
brutal.
I don't – like, it's not like I hate the song. It's just like if we're going to sit at dinner and all dinner, all I'm going to hear is Christmas music. Not every Christmas music song is good, but if you put on like the best hits of
most
the
aren't.
2000s, like at least I like gets mixed in some good music, right? And you just remind me of something though, to that extent. And I wanted to figure out when I did this holiday podcast to sneak in Stevie F Baby just one more time. But when Stevie F Baby caddied for me at the Dunlop Phoenix in Japan, we had a translator. I may have told this story before, but she said the clubhouse plays one song and one song only the entire time of the tournament, 7 days in a row. And she goes, "You will never forget the song. We were there for 7 days. It's been 2 years, and I know the song in my head. I know the melody. Obviously, I don't speak Japanese, but it's na 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 na. I mean, I will never. Oh, it is on a loop. If you sit in that, I can't imagine working the pro shop. You hear it for the 8 to 12 hours you're working there. It's insanity, and that's how to me some Christmas songs get, because there's some, you know, like there's some that I think are good. And I'll listen to like they're real, like not real music, but like it's like a normal
give
song.
Give me an example. Give me an example of one that's good.
Like, I don't hate the Mariah Carey song. Like, I think that's a good song. Yeah. Some of the, like the Biebs has a couple, but like when it gets Biebs really like, like Mother Goosey, it's like when I have a kid, I love to, I'll bang it. I'll rock the house down, but it's like, I don't need, you know,
there's some
jingle
horrible,
bells. Like, I mean,
horrible,
it's a good song to listen to Christmas once song. To be like, oh yeah, hell yeah, it's Christmas time. But like, I don't need to hear it. It's like a poem sung to me from like a Dr. Seuss book. That's like, oh, that was cool. But like, would I rather listen to J. Cole? Yeah. Sorry. Like, I like it better.
Like a real,
yeah, like a real like, music.
I'd like
yeah.
To a new album. Yeah, that's good. All right. So you have you did your least favorites.
Yeah, my favorites. As someone who does not get to eat at home a whole lot, the good food of Christmas, especially when you have family, we're not doing a whole lot. I think my mom will come though, and she's promised me she would cook something to eat. So I just think the good food, being around family, obviously can't be beat. I think that's an obvious one, but I was trying to be a little bit more clever. So the good food is just like it's a treat. And then my other one is this is probably the opposite of how most people feel, but a day where golf courses are closed, so I'm literally not allowed to go. Like, it's a forced vacation. Smart. Like, I literally can't. I can't go to the gym, and I cannot go to the golf course on the 25th. And it is – I didn't like it when I was a kid because, you know, we're not – you know, like I said, I'm half Jewish. It's not like we had these big Christmases. We don't have these big parties or family gatherings. So I'd like to go practice or do some. But now as I've gotten older, I'm like, all right, you are literally – you have to sit at home and relax. And it's like, okay. So I like that part of it. That's my personal favorite part.
Honorable mention, favorite part of the holidays is maybe my favorite sports watching day of the year is NBA basketball on Christmas Day.
Oh, I didn't think about it.
For the moment
NBA
you wake
unders.
The moment you
Christmas
wake up.
Unders yeah. is fun. Christmas unders, unders is a blast. Yeah,
just every game, start especially when you're West Coast, like being out there, the first game comes on like literally when you wake up. And it's really, really hard to beat. I suggested we go to the Knicks game to Sydney the other day, and I won't tell you the look she gave. I'm just going to say it was not a – was not a very positive one. I have one golf thing. We're done for the year for the most part. What's the best golf shot that Max Homa hit in 2021 and the golf shot that you'd most want to mulligan on from 2021?
I think the best shot I hit was the bunker shot on 10 at Riv on Saturday. I was between I said that one because I really like I even when I hit it I looked at Joe like and I said that's the best shot I've ever hit in my life. So I think that was it. So I'm gonna go with that. I've just like never really been in that bunker and thought to myself to that back right pin. Like you always see people in there and you're like, oh, this is dead, and it was downwind. Like I just don't know how it was a miracle. It was a true miracle.
So you hold on real quick, Max. You drove it in the front right.
Yeah, I was in the
correct.
Was it? I was in the first one, which was like the one up by the green. But I was on the left side of it, which gave me some life. But it was the back right pin, so it's already screwed. But it was like downwind, like a million. That was the problem. And like I was like already gonna have a hard time if it wasn't. And you know, I've watched it a bunch and I've listened to the thing, and they're like, you know, there's just no way. I kind of aimed right at the pin, and I thought, you know, if I hit it a little too hard, I needed to get it out, but if I hit it too hard, it would go in the back bunker where DJ hit it, and then it's a really easy bunker shot from there to make par. So I guess the one thing I couldn't do is hit it short in the bunker again. But I don't know, I just opened it and I thumped it and I spun it and I landed it like dead where I was looking. Like if the hole was where I was, if I was aiming at where the hole was, I would have made I would have made it. And it was just perfect. I made like the 6-footer for birdie. And it was like I've been there a lot, and I've watched that shot a lot, and it's just the worst place you could be, especially with the wind. So that had to be it. And obviously I ended up winning, which helped kind of solidify that one for me. I had a worse and a mulligan. The worse I hit, because they kind of interchangeable. Golfers could probably I went through the it was much harder to figure out my favorite best shot than it was to. I had a million mulligans in my head. There was just like 10,000. But the mulligan I would say is I at Pebble Beach on Sunday, I got off to a really good start. I think I started par, eagle, birdie. I was in one of the last few groups. I don't think I would have caught Daniel Berger. He played great, but I definitely have played well there, and I thought I could have gone real low and maybe pushed him a little bit. But I hit I went par, eagle, birdie, birdie or something like that. I was low early, and I doubled 5 because I pulled a 7-iron in the back left bunker, and I had a really bad lie and ended up just making double. And I just wish – I think it felt like if I would have hit a little – better shot in there, and even if I would have just made par, you know, I birdied 6 and I think I birdied 7. Like I think I just would have, I could have had a real dumb low front 9 and put a lot of pressure on him or on them at the time. So that would have been my mulligan. But if you ask any golfer, I think we could give you 1,000 mulligans. yeah, so that was kind of a hard one to come up with.
I made a hole in one this year.
You did? So hell yeah.
As my best shot of
the
year.
That's a pretty obvious one.
I mean, I don't have a lot to kind of thumb through. And then when I shanked it out of bounds at the Connecticut Open when I was 1-under and playing pretty solid.
I didn't hear about that one. Yes, I did. Never mind. That was the one we weren't supposed to talk about. That's why I repressed that memory.
Thank you. I appreciate that. It was a cold shank out of bounds. That was the day after Greenberg had been telling me all about the shanks he was hitting. So
we got a lot of heat for that podcast for talking about it so much.
What about the shank?
They're like, you guys, I have to go play. People are like, I got to play today. Even Michael, I think even Michael Kim texted me like, hey, like, chill.
Can you say shankless? Can you say the word? Can you say the word shankless? I haven't. Listen, I've got a dumb idea. I think you're going to like
it. Wouldn't be a podcast without a dumb idea.
I think you're going to like this. I was talking to my wife about this the other day, and she really liked it. And she rarely likes any of the ideas I come up with about golf, much less things for the podcast. So, do you remember? You'll remember this. Remember that they had the fantasy football bet like a year or two ago, and the guy had to sit in the Waffle House for 24 hours.
Yeah.
And every waffle he ate, he lost an hour on the bet. All right. So I've got a bet similar to that. So you have a bet. It's fantasy football. It's whatever. And the loser for a full year, the loser of the bet, every phone call he receives, no matter who it is, boss, wife, dad, mom, random number, whomever, you have to answer it doing the Adele hello. Like you have to sing the Adele hello on every phone call for a full year.
Imagine like that's the day like whoever you've always wanted to call you calls you. Like imagine. Like you
and you
like, imagine Tiger calls you. Call. And you have to act like
hello.
You have to act like something went wrong. I mean, hello? Hey. Yeah.
Anyway, what are your thoughts?
I really love all. I would play. I don't do fantasy football, but I would play it without any prize, just for who could not get last for some kind of.
Yeah,
like, those are the best bets.
It's more fun.
I got a buddy
last.
Who's got a tattoo bet. Of a pineapple on his ass because he got last. I had a in fantasy. I know a buddy who had to go. I think he's JT's buddy. He had to go to every, or maybe it was Tway's buddy. He had to go to every bar with them on a bar crawl around Christmas and dress up as a Christmas tree and plug himself into an outlet in every bar. I thought that was thirsty. I've had a buddy had to go back and take the ACT.
Come on.
The ideas of these are so creative. So I'm all in on like just the awkward, like that waffle bed is amazing. I'm like so all good. In on that. The Adele one is amazing. Like all that, it would be just so funny. The only tough part about the Adele one is I don't think – the others would get the satisfaction because I wouldn't really want to call. Like, how many times am I really going to call you and get you to say it? Because at some point I'm going to get annoyed. But like, if I could be a fly on the wall and you're on speaker and like I said, like Tiger Woods calls you and you have to be like, you know, do the whole thing, that would make everything worth it. I like the idea.
You'd probably get a lot of call. I think you'd get a lot of phone calls. At least,
buddy, let me tell
months.
You this: if we had this bet and I won and you had to do it, I would text every single person in my phone to call you that day. I would.
Call,
you would be
Shane.
On the phone the entire day. Your voice would be hoarse from singing.
The Adele bet. The Adele bet is the one we're presenting, dude. The Christmas tree bet. Is
yeah, that was pretty fantastic.
What, having to plug yourself in
sit
is really,
in the corner
really
of
funny.
Every bar.
See, this is the thing is like there's the you know, sometimes the world can seem very heavy and then there's still kind of shit out there.
People are still idiots.
That much lighter. still idiots. What's you're playing Century, I'm assuming.
Yeah,
you're playing Hawaii. Are you playing, what do you play? What's your first few weeks look like?
Change up the West Coast a little bit. I'm playing Century. Then I'm not playing again until Torrey Pines. Then I'm playing Waste Management and LA. So. Taken off a couple that I normally play.
Pebble?
No Pebble this year. Doesn't look like it.
Oh,
yeah,
bummer,
I don't think if I get the call from back-to-back MVP Aaron Rodgers that he wants to play again, I'll go, but I don't think he's playing because he's probably going to win the Super Bowl.
Wow, giving him the MVP there too.
I think he should win the MVP. Like, convince me otherwise.
They're the best team.
He's clearly
the
best quarterback.
I'm giving
you, like, it just doesn't.
I'm giving you crap about it, but they're the best team in football, and no, it's so weird. Can you remember a team that had the person playing the best in a sport who is a known name,
not
a
winning.
Very popular name? No, well, just not getting any fanfare.
No,
I mean,
wild.
They're covering every week. They're winning all the time. Nobody talks about the Packers. It is just so strange. I wonder if it's from the year and all the stuff that's come down with Aaron, but it does feel like we're talking as little about, you know, a red hot, you know, popular team, people like Green Bay, you know, they're a known commodity. It's not some random pop-up squad. Just seems strange that we're not hearing as much about their
There's
chances.
A couple stats I read that are wild. Aaron like prides himself in not turning the ball over, and it's pretty obvious and clear. He's obviously good at everything, but that is, to me, it's kind of like if you watch a golfer, like it's just like a Jim Furyk type thing in this sense that, like, you know, he just didn't want to make bogeys, and like Aaron just doesn't turn the ball over. When he, and now Brett Favre is probably the opposite of that, although an absolute beast. Aaron is, I think, 8 touchdowns away from 450, something like that, maybe 7 or 8. And, or 18, I don't know. But he's like, he's very close. And when he gets there, if he gets there without another pick, he would have 100, he would get to that feat with 193 less interceptions than than Brett Favre had. And the other one is at this exact point, or I'm sorry, maybe that's like what they are now. When he gets to 450, he's like the next closest to him in interceptions is still like 60 more than him. It's Tom Brady, like at that rate. It's just like pretty remarkable how few he has thrown. And I think that's why, I don't know. If I was the defense, if I was a coach, if I was a diehard Packer fan, I feel like that would just be very comforting to know that like my guy, he ain't gonna lose it. Like the Alabama has made a dynasty off of quarterbacks who are known as game managers. Then you get a year where you get like, you know, someone like this year, like Bryce. It's like, oh shoot, like now it's tough because like he's a animal, right? He's a monster. And yeah, he might turn, maybe I haven't looked at it. I don't think he has, but like then it just almost seems unfair at times. But that's how I feel about Rodgers, because he makes every throw, but he also like doesn't throw to the wrong team very much. And it's just like, this just seems like a really fun thing to be a part of. I don't know a ton about football, I mean, but like keeping the ball seems way more fun for the defense not to have to run straight back onto the field and be like, hey, dude, I was trying to catch my breath. I'm sorry, yeah, man. Nice go pass. Stop him.
Well, I mean, the no bogey analogy is so perfect for that, because it's like, I mean, you've played matches against guys that don't make bogeys. Like, and when they don't make bogeys, it's just so frustrating, because if you're 2 down, you just don't feel like you can get back.
It's just, you're always going forward momentum wise. You just feel like you're always going forward. Even if it's a 3 and out of football, it's like, well, like this is the game. If you turn it over, you know, on your side of the field, it just feels like the whole thing is like pick sixes. Like that just, you know, it just doesn't seem like that's possible, right? And then all of a sudden you're like, yo, we're going to score this drive. And like 3 seconds later, they have 7 points. Like what just happened?
And it puts the pressure on the coaching, because then they don't feel like if they have to kick the field goal and you're up 2 and there's a minute left, like you're going to lose because that's how good Aaron is. Max, I'm going to get you out on this. It's my last flight of 2021. Worst thing I heard, it wasn't this week, but I was going to tell you, I was going to let you in on my little story from last week. So Cindy went to Arizona last week for about 5 days to see family and friends and all that stuff. So I had Henry. Our last golf today was last Friday. So it's leading into the PNC, right? Well, because of Tiger playing, we changed some stuff around. No big deal. We get this babysitter. And we're texting with the babysitter. And I said, hey, listen, you've got to be at the house at 8 o'clock in the morning. That's the latest possible time you could be there. We're on the air at 9:30. It takes me 15 minutes to get to the studio. I'm there 3 hours early for typical shows, so this was going to be weird anyway. But, you know, circumstances happen. Not a big deal. So this we texted with the babysitter 2 days before, making sure everything's confirmed. We were going to give her a nice little bonus tip, you know?
Kind of
you. Know
what
I'm saying? Like, sprinkle a little extra money to get there early. It's 8:03. I'm sitting there with Henry. And I'm freaking out a little bit, and I send the text. I have not communicated with the babysitter yet. Only Cindy has. I sent a text, and I said, hey, just checking in. What time do you think you're going to be here? And the worst thing I heard this week or last week was, who is this?
Oh, no.
The moment I got who is this, I went, oh, this is not good.
No.
This is not good. I knew from who is this that something had gone wrong. So I said, I'm Shane. I'm Cindy's husband. Oh, I forgot. I forgot it was the day. So,
God.
Needless to say, we finally got to the house, and I was running into makeup and rushing onto the set. And for the last show of the year, I was a bit frazzled.
You should have been able to bring Henry on set. It was
COVID.
Because it's father son week.
If it hadn't been COVID, I already thought of that. That's exactly what I thought. The same thing, Max, is I was thinking, I'll bring Henry. He could hang out. If he wanders onto the set, we're talking about the father-son anyway, the parent-child. Henry's there. I'm working. You know,
I got to say this, and I have a mic in my face for the first time in a while. I feel like people have to tiptoe around this topic, and I just want to put out there, this COVID is a real bitch.
It sucks.
It's a real bitch, really, man.
Here's a take. Here's a take at the end of the show. You know what? You know what's not a lot of fun?
COVID. Dude, like,
you know what's not great?
It's just, I know, I feel so bad complaining about like the little part. I'm healthy as can be. I get it. Sue me again, two times. But God, man, do I hate wearing a mask on a plane. Like, I just hate it.
Everything sucks way so worse bad. With COVID. And the thing is, like, I think if you go back and listen to Get a Grip in May of 2020 and then September of 2020, and you hear our voices and you hear the way we're talking about it and you go, you know, this is going to suck. But the fact that it's December of 2021 and we got all new wave and you're like, God, I'm just so effing over it, man. Everything else at least runs its course. This will not run its course.
What's so weird about my job is we go everywhere and every single state has a different rule and law or whatever you want to call it. Every single one of them. So like I went to Florida, which has no laws ever. And you know what you're getting into at least when you go there. And then I flew to the distillery, Elijah Craig's distillery in Kentucky Sunday night. And I landed, I walked outside and like, I don't know why. I just assumed like it was going to be because I'd just been there. It was going to be like Florida. And I, you know, live in Arizona where like, you know, masks are not a mandate. I get there and like a couple people wearing them. And now, and this happens everywhere I go. And I'm like, okay, am I breaking the rule? And I'm like,
nah,
you know, right. And I always, Lacey, I always joke. It's like, I'm not trying to make a political statement with what I'm doing with my mask or no mask. But if I don't have to wear one, if it's not a mandate, then I'm going to decide if I'm going to wear one on my own. And so I'm like walking in there. I'm like very confused. And the next day we're doing the thing and some people aren't. And I'm like, finally, it was like, I just got so I was like, do I have to have one of these on? Like, I'm not trying to ruin anyone's day here. No. Right. Okay. And I'm like, okay. So then like, I'll go to another state and I'm like, it is a constant like Google search of like, what are the newest rules so I can fit in with the people around me and not step on anybody's toes. It is. I don't know why it is so hilarious to me that that is what happens each new state I go to, but that it makes me laugh because because when you get off the plane, everyone's still wearing one. So you don't know right when you land, you don't know. Right. It takes you a while to get to like a Chipotle or something where you're like,
to the first establishment.
Yes, first
establishment. You've got to get to your first establishment. Yeah. Hotel, restaurant, Starbucks, whatever. You've got to go there because then, like you said, everybody in the airport and then all of the transportation.
Yes.
Away from it, right?
So you're in the real dark,
car,
buddy.
An Uber, mask. Yeah. Yeah. The COVID dance is what I call it. You're always like you're always like you. I think you said it so perfectly. Is you're never trying to make a statement. You're trying to follow all the rules that they ask, but you don't know the rules. You know, because every place,
every library you go into in the world is like you have to whisper. Like that's a common rule. Like it's a common rule. Every golf course you go to does. You know, some say no hats inside. Not all of them. Not all of them, buddy. So you got to look around and see, is anybody – I went to Arizona Country Club yesterday. Nobody had a hat on inside. I'm like, this is a hat-off type establishment. That's what I feel everywhere I go.
Do I need to have a hat on or not? I had that – I got yelled at a bit.
Yeah?
One
time. Yeah, we do too, though. We get yelled at too.
Yeah, well, there you go.
It's very scary.
I flew Arizona to Orlando. I got in a rental car. I drove. I got to Bay Hill. It's been 6.5 hours of travel. I walk in to check into the hotel, and I get the, sir, first thing, sir, no hats. And I was like, oh, man, I'm so sorry. I literally just walked in off of 7 hours of traveling. But
hey.
I got yelled. What's up, Lacey?
I don't have
he
the thing.
He said, what's up? Hey, let's play a game. Let's play a game.
All right, let's play it.
Shane, what do you say?
Hi. What do you say?
Hi. He said hi.
I'm trying to lip read, and I have nothing. Okay, I'm going.
That was an experiment that did not work out well.
She was trying to
lip read. It didn't go well.
Oh, can you lip read?
Yeah, did you just say, can you lip read? I got that right? Yeah, I can.
Yeah. There you go. That's very good. Hey, I'm so impressed, by the way. Your setup behind you is so much more professional.
I had a thing.
Do you have anything else before
yesterday?
We go?
And I've started to move my stuff around with the Zooms, and like they like little things in the background. So I was supposed to bring some stuff, and that's what I went with.
Anything else? Any other shout outs? Anything you want to get out before
we go?
Oh,
man, there's a million things I could rant on and on about, but probably not. Saw a great documentary thing the other day on Netflix called The Alpinist. It's like, if you've seen Free Solo, it's like that on just mega steroids, like just Mark McGuire type steroids. Yeah, it's phenomenal. About to start a new book called The Four Agreements. Pretty excited about that. Man, million.
Just hunker down, getting ready for
a million, huh? A million things.
What's, hey, real quick before we go, I was going to ask you this when we were talking about golf and I forgot to. Can just a minute or so, I just want you to talk about the Mark Blackburn stuff, like going, like joining him and how that has helped you, because I feel like it's a great relationship and you guys have really enjoyed each other.
Yeah.
And I just like what he's done to kind of help you get to a place where you feel like you're at right now.
Yeah. For anybody who's like, listen, before, like, I think the biggest part was just now I get my body and how, where my club needs to get to so that I can rotate. I don't have the best hips in the world. I started working with a very liked and respected trainer, Colby, and he, Kay Wayne, as everyone calls him. I mean, he's the guy, if you saw him, he was with Tiger in the Bahamas, JT's trainer. He's Gooch's trainer. That's how I got on through Gooch. And he's really been helping me with my motion, but for the time being, or with my flexibility and strength in those areas. But for the time being, still like knowing that, hey, when my swing is a little bit flatter and pointed laid off and shallow, I can turn real hard and I can't do that from up. So that's been the biggest part Mark's done. Mark's help with, I think, you know, like I've had with all my coaches, the communication's always been great. I just think that I'm getting it maybe better. There's such an interesting thing with coaching is you got the smartest guy in the world say something, and if you don't hear it the way it was intended, you can chase your tail for a while. I feel like maybe I haven't done that as much. We have done it once, I remember, after the Austin tournament, but kind of nipped in the bud a little quicker, I guess, than I had in the past, possibly. I'm not really sure, but the biggest thing he's done is I've become a freaking really good wedge player, and it's changed my golf. I can drive the ball now. I've definitely driven the ball the best I have because I think of the rotation and committing to just hitting a cut, but I've never driven the ball like this before for this long. I mean, it's been damn near a year of just like, I feel like I could be a great, I'm never going to be the longest by any means, but I feel like I can actually like, I could beat up the par fives real well with my driver now, cause I hit a lot of fairways and I hit it above average. So that's been cool. And then add in wedge play. And that's what he's taught me more than anything. And like, I don't think I've become some insignificantly greater iron player. I think I'm better, but it's not worlds different. The driver has been, but the wedges are just like, I feel like a different human. And that's what he really taught me, all that. I had never really learned how to hit a wedge properly. I think it's a, for good reason, it's a nuanced part of the game. And it seems so obvious, and it seemed obvious to me. And once we started working on it, I realized, man, why can't I do this and that? And now it's my favorite thing, basically my favorite thing to practice, because it's so interesting to me. It's so fun. Like when you watch golf, too, it's just like, you know, you watch the father or the parent child, father son, whatever, Charlie and Tiger, when Tiger hits that little cut 65 yard wedge shot to an inch, like I just can't explain to you like how fun that shot is to then go try and get better at. And it may, and to the point of the really hard golf courses and the majors, when you do need to make birdies and you have 75 yards, but the pin's tucked and it's on a right to left slope and you need to hold it in there and whatever. Yeah, you can hit 12 feet. You can make that putt. Do not get me wrong. A lot of people do that. I maybe sometimes do that instead, but you will see shots from high quality wedge players that spin up, you know, kind of right up the hill and get 6 to 8 feet closer at times. And that is the stuff now that I'm just like obsessed with. I think it's so cool. And a lot of that's just from Mark. It's just it's a slightly different technique, but it works its way all the way up through the bag for me. And that's fun too, because then I can, when my swing feels off, I can go to my wedges and kind of get it back, kind of work from the ground up in a way. So I've been enjoying that part. And, but like I said, like with everybody, we have a good communication. He's good friends with Joe. And I think everybody is on the same page.
The Tiger wedge shots.
It's just so cool. I mean, that 40 yard spin. Oh. And he spun back a shot from 40 yards, like 8 feet. I don't know how he does this stuff.
Yeah. I was, you know, we were talking, Damon and I were talking at golf today, like leading into PNC about like, what are you most excited to see? Like, what are you looking for? And I said two things. I said, I just want to see what his numbers are like. You know, I don't want to see maxed out Tiger. I just wanted to see what he was hitting at distance wise. And I want to see the wedge. Like, I want to see 40, 50, 60 yards because, you know, I mean, he's so underrated. Yeah. I mean, we talk so much about all of his brilliance, and that might be what he was the most brilliant at, was his hands for those little feel shots. And he still hit, you know, like you said, he still hits the cutter and he can still hit the hooking chip. And he just manipulates so many different aspects of it and knows exactly how he's manipulating the face and the club and the groove he's hitting the ball with. And it's mastery stuff, dude. Like, he's still got you know, which is special.
That's pretty cool to think that. I just don't think that ever goes away. Phil's still got it. I just think when you have it like that, it just doesn't – it's just never gone. It just he just has the hands forever. And I think that's cool because, I mean, even at the end of time, you watch Lee Trevino, who's one of the best ball strikers of all time. He's still the – probably the coolest person to watch hit a golf ball. He's 84. Watching him hit a 3-wood into 18. And he does this thing for all the golf junkies out there. I mean, he does this thing where like he reroutes it pretty far under and holds the face so open and hits a draw now. It's like, dang, like you just got it. Like, it's just so cool. It's just the stuff that like makes your, I don't know. I think it's why golf is so cool. Cause it's not like in 15 years, Aaron Rodgers could grab a football and heave it and you would just be dumbfounded. I don't think he'll be able to spin it like that anymore. And I just don't think, especially around the green, short game, whatever, Tiger, Phil, those guys will just, you know, Spieth when he was old in like 100 years. Like, they're just always, I think they're always going to have that. And I think that is so cool to know that like in 20 years, Tiger could be at the father, son, or a clinic and you're going to see him hit some shot where everyone in there is going to be like, what the hell, man? Like, pros are going to be like, how are you doing that? It's like Seve. It's what stories I hear about Seve. It's just like, it's incredible. So I think that's awesome.
The John Rahm talk at Jose Maria, yes, the Masters, the cheers, like such a special, I think that's cool amazing thing. I mean, it's one of the real treats about golf. I've told this story before. When I was caddying at St. Andrews, I was in a group one day with Peter Thompson.
Ooh.
And I didn't get his bag, but he was in the group. And I watched Peter Thompson play St. Andrews for 18 holes, and he was probably mid-70s, and he hit it nowhere, of course. I mean, 70, you're 75 years old, how far are you going to hit it? But that action around the greens and the wedges and the nine irons and the chipping and those little types of shots, you know, where you could see. I mean, you could see why he won five opens or whatever. So
yeah, it's just the that's perfect. The mastery is just – that doesn't leave you. I can't –
Did you
I
watch
cannot...
it? Were you locked? Did you watch it all?
On Sunday, I couldn't stop. I couldn't believe it. I didn't. I was not making fun of. I actually really, especially with Tiger playing, I think that event is amazing. The fact that JT plays, I think, makes it amazing. But it wouldn't suck me in ever. I would put it on, see. I was glad Nelly was playing. Like some stuff I think is cool to see, but I would never watch it. Like watch it. Like be captivated by it. I couldn't turn it off. Like I really couldn't turn it off. For me, just watching Tiger Woods play golf for whatever reason, I really enjoy it. If he's like 100% or 0%, like I just enjoy watching him swing the golf club. He makes everything look, I don't know how to explain it. It's just, aesthetically pleasing to the eye. I also was trying to, I can't imagine what, you know, Tiger's given us a little bit here and there, but not a lot. And he is giving JT probably more than that, but I don't know what that is. He's giving Charlie everything he knows.
Right.
I try and watch Charlie to see what he over-exaggerates, knowing that maybe that's what his dad is telling him
he's
to
like
do.
Pushing,
so I like looked at a couple things and you could see him. And I'm going to keep those to myself. But that's what I liked. I very much was like geeking out trying to figure out those things, because there's a couple that seemed, I thought, like semi-obvious, and then there's some I could just be making up. But it was fun, and it was fun. It's fun to, I don't know, I try not to get in the sappy part, but it was fun to see him laugh and smile, because, you know, as much as like he's most of our favorite golfer, like at this point in the game, like he's given us a million things. Like, it would be nice if he could just like live his life. I hope he plays golf again. I hope he plays at Riviera this year. I hope I get my practice run with him somewhere at some point. But if I don't, it doesn't matter. It's cool to see that he like Noling Up had this interview podcast with Rory like 2 weeks ago. I don't know if you listened to it. It's fascinating. Rory's the best person on the PGA Tour as far as like Rom is too, about like listening to or whatever. But Rory's my favorite guy out there to for a million reasons. And he gives this insight and everything. And they ask him the question that everyone gets asked in golf at some point. Do you, that plays professional, do you still love golf? It's an impossible question to answer because the answers, it's an impossible answer or question to answer with just a yes or no, because there has to be, if you say yes, there is almost always a contingency to it or a caveat to it. And because I think mostly everybody would say yes, but it's not the same that you did when you were 12. So it's kind of fun to see like Tiger, who I don't know if he loves golf. And then you watch this, you're like, yeah, hell yeah, he loves golf. I think that's cool. Cause it's gotta be, I mean, this is his life as great as it is financially or whatever. And career wise, like it's been tremendous, one of a kind, but like the rest of his life, that's hard, man. Being in the spotlight, that's some crazy stuff since he was like 3-4 years old. I mean, that's insanity. So it's like a lot of this stuff is not enviable. So to get to see him like happy, I know it sounds stupid because we're not like friends or anything, but it's just like, man, at least it makes us all feel like, I don't know, in a way like worth it, that like at the end of the day, we're still all going to love golf and like playing. Yeah. Maybe there's a million cameras around and there won't be when I play golf with, you know, my future kid, but like, we're still going to be the same thing. We're going to be high-fiving and hopefully my kid's going to be talking shit to me like he did to Tiger. Yes. Like, that's what I want my kid to do. I want my kid to do the Money Manziel right in my eye, because right when I make it on top of him, I'm going to push him over and Money Manziel right on top of him. Like, you know, like that's the stuff. So it's like, it's all the same thing. So it's cool because at the end of a career, like what are we going to, you know, that's what you kind of have. So I was captivated by Tiger and watching him play golf, but I was pleasantly like surprised and pleased by how much I enjoyed like watching them, like and all of the contestants. Like Nelly's dad freaking out was really cool.
He would do the wrong-handed
fist pump. He does left-handed fist pump, which is very bad.
Yeah, like he did the other arm.
He said he called his coach from tennis to help him calm down. Like, I thought that was cool. Like, I don't know. There was little stuff like that I just find with those. These stupid, silly season events, and I played in one this year, always seems so dumb. And I played in one this year, and I realized this is so fun. We do two pro-ams. The groups that are at the tournament have a blast. It was a lot of fun for them and for us. And then when watching on TV, I don't know. Maybe it sucks. I don't care. The tournament itself was a blast, and the sponsor gets a lot out of it. Then the PNC, I always thought was like, this is a silly season, whatever. And maybe it's because this year I finally, again, credit to Tiger, he does this all the time, got to watch again. And like, or I had not had to, but I was like almost like forced into watching as a fan of golf. And I was like, man, this is awesome. This is an awesome golf tournament. And I don't know. It was, you get now why all these tournaments, I guess, exist. Because even if Tiger wasn't there, would as many people watch? Hell no, not even close. But, you know, since we got to see it a couple of years, now I get it. Like, it was really fun to watch all the parents and their kids run around, especially when, to me, it's really fun. I think that's why, where like Nelly is the pro and like her parent isn't. Like, I don't know. That was cool because like she's freaking number one in the world and her dad is, you know, he's a stud, but her dad's her dad and he gets to go be like a proud, where it's like the, you know, we all are so used to like John Daly being proud of his son and whatever. Now you're getting to see like the opposite, where she's trying to carry him along and he's just like freaking out happy to be there.
You need to just win a major this year, and then you can, I don't know, take Scotty next year. Make Scotty.
I'm winning a major taking Joel Damon.
Joel Day. Everybody have a safe and healthy and all that holidays and a new year and all that good stuff. Max, I appreciate the time. I hope you you have a good rest of your December. I'm excited to watch you play a little G in January. That's this little holiday get you through the next day or two of all this traveling and all that stuff.
Thank you, Shane. Thank you, everybody. It was nice to stop back in. As we talked about yesterday, Shane, maybe the sign off to this podcast was the glue that was holding COVID together. But please, for the love of God, wash your hands.
Wash them.
Get a Grip with Max Homa and Shane Bacon is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.